Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 42.
Red Boy has Tang Monk in his place, the Fiery Cloud Cave, and he's got big plans.
Not just capture, right. He wants to.
Eat him, yeah. To gain longevity.
Yeah.
The text specifically says extend life by 1,000 years.
Mm.
Big deal.
Wow. Okay.
But he decides he wants to share. He wants to invite his dad, the Bull Demon King, over for the meal.
Generous in a demonic sort of way.
Huh. Right. So he sends out 6 of his lieutenants with the invitation.
And Wukong, our hero, he's nearby.
Always. He overhears the whole thing. Hears the name Bull Demon King, remembers the connection, and bang, the idea hits him.
Don't fight.
Impersonate. Use the transformation skill.
Yeah.
Become the Bull Demon King and just trick Red Boy into letting the monk go. Deception first.
Makes sense. It's his go-to move. So how does he pull off the transformation?
Well, the source gives us specifics. He doesn't just look like him. He transforms, pulls out some hairs.
Of course, the hairs.
Shouts change and makes himself a little entourage, like a few fake demons follow him.
Gotta have backup, even fake backup. Needs the whole presence.
Exactly. And he sets up a little scene, pretends to be out hunting. Oh no, right on the road where the lieutenants are gonna pass.
Smart. Ambush invitation.
And it works. At first, anyway. The text says the lieutenants, they're just ordinary folks, basically.
Yeah.
They can't tell real from fake.
They just see this impressive figure, the entourage.
Yep. They immediately think, that's the great king. Kneel down, deliver the invitation, mention the whole 1,000-year longevity thing.
And Wukong, as the Bull Demon King.
Plays it cool, totally smooth, accepts the invite, says, yeah, okay, let's head back to the cave right now.
Perfect. Stage one. Complete success. So they head to the Fiery Cloud Cave.
Oh, yeah. Red Boy is apparently super excited. His dad's coming, orders everyone out, flags flying, drums beating, the whole 9 yards.
Big welcome party.
Huge. And Wukong struts in, still in character. The text says, brrr, like swaggering, chest puffed out, walks right in, takes the main seat, owns the place.
He's really selling it. Confident.
Totally. And then we get that key moment, the father-son meeting. Red Boy kneels, very respectfully greets the imposter as, K, Father King.
Establishing that relationship Wukong's banking on.
Precisely. Then Red Boy explains why he called him over. He's caught Tang Monk, this incredibly holy man.
10 lifetimes of cultivation. That's the source of the power, right?
That's the belief, yeah.
Yeah.
Eating his flesh grants immortality, basically. And he wants to share, give his dad that 1,000-year boost.
Okay, so Wukong's in the main seat, playing the part. What's his move now? He can't just sit down for dinner.
Right. Strategy time. He pretends to be surprised, maybe a little concerned, and he tries to scare Red Boy.
Scare him? How?
By warning him about Tang Monk's disciple. You know, Sun Wukong.
Uh-huh. Warning him about himself. That's bold.
Oh, it is. And he lays it on thick. Talks about Wukong's incredible power. His endless transformations. Does he mention the big one?
Oh, yeah. The uproar in heaven reminds him how even 100,000 heavenly soldiers, Har Tai Ar, couldn't catch him. He's painting himself as this unstoppable force.
What's the specific threat, though?
It's pretty graphic, actually. He says Wukong might not even bother fighting fair. He might just use his staff, poke a hole in the mountain, Mo Jin, just tug, lift the whole mountain away, leave Red Boy homeless.
Whoa. So the plan is, scare Red Boy into thinking keeping Tang Monk is too dangerous, release him out of fear.
Exactly, but it doesn't quite work.
Red Boy doesn't buy it.
Nope. He kind of pushes back immediately. He says his father is boosting the enemy's morale and putting down his own son. Uji. Ooh, touchy.
Yeah. And Red Boy's confident because, well, he thinks he's already beaten Wukong and Zubaji just that morning.
Oh, right. He had that fight earlier.
He sure did. He boasts about it, mentions his special weapon, the Samadhi True Fire, said that he completely routed Wukong, Quang Prong, and left Baji all burnt and confused.
He even tricked Baji, didn't he?
Yeah. Transformed into Guanyin, tricked him, captured him in a bag. He's planning to steam Baji later, too.
So, from Red Boy's perspective, Wukong already ran away scared. This warning just sounds weird.
Exactly. His confidence is sky high based on his own recent wins.
So Wukong tries again, Still in character.
He does. He mentions Wukong's 72 transformations.
Yeah.
He'll be trying a different angle of the threat.
Like he could sneak in.
Yeah, maybe turn into a fly, a mosquito, or a rat. But Red Boy's still not worried. Says his guards can spot him. And then, ironically,
what?
Wukong, still as the Bull Demon King, says, hey, you know, Wukong could even transform into my likeness.
He literally tells him while disguised as him.
I know, the audacity. But Red Boy, still flush with victory, just brushes it off. He's not deterred.
Okay, so the fear tactic is a total bust. Wukong needs Plan B fast because dinner's presumably getting closer.
Right. He can't keep warning him, and he definitely can't eat the monk. So he shifts gears completely.
And this is where it gets tricky for him.
This is the turning point. It's not the look that fails him. It's the behavior. He comes up with an excuse not to eat. Right now, anyway.
What's the excuse?
He claims he's observing a special fast. A pert, a thunder fast.
Mm-hmm.
Says he does it 4 days a month, and wouldn't you know it, today is one of those days.
A thunder fast for the Bull Demon King.
Exactly. He even adds this little flourish about how his mother told him to do good deeds in his old age. Suggests they eat Tang Monk tomorrow instead.
Oh boy, I can see how that might sound.
Oh, I'm off. Off is an understatement. This is what triggers Red Boy's suspicion. The text literally gives us his thought process. Wait a minute. My dad eats people for a living. He's like over 1,000 years old. Why would he suddenly start fasting now?
This is evilly.
Yeah, that doesn't track at all with the usual Bull Demon King persona.
Not one bit. Red Boy immediately thinks this sounds fake. Suspicious, suspicious. The behavioral inconsistency. That's the alarm bell.
Fascinating. It's not the magic, it's the manners. Or lack thereof. For the character.
Precisely. So Red Boy's mind is racing now. He needs to check this. He slips out for a moment.
To do what?
He goes and casually asks those lieutenants who delivered the invitation, hey, where did you guys actually meet my father?
Checking the story.
Yeah, they tell him, halfway along the road. Nah, not at home where you'd normally find him.
Gotcha. So he wasn't where he should have been, and he's acting weird. Double red flag. Red Boy puts it together instantly. He pulled a fake one. This isn't the Great King.
He knows. So does he just attack.
He gets his demons ready, but decides, no, let's test him one more time. But this time, make it personal. Really personal.
Something only the real father would know.
Exactly. The ultimate test. He goes back inside.
What does he ask?
He asks the fake Bull Demon King for his, Red Boy's, own birth date and time.
Whoa. Guanyin's place. Uh-huh. And the source details his arrival. He meets the 24 heavenly beings, the Wuxixing.
Gatekeepers, basically.
Pretty much. They announce him, you know, stress the urgency. It shows you the kind of formal setup he's walking into.
Okay, so he gets inside, makes his case to Guanyin, lays it all out. Master's captured by Red Boy, the holy infant king in the Fire Cloud Cave.
And he highlights the main problem, this incredibly powerful Samadhi fire.
Right. The fire that got him before.
Accidentally. He stresses that he couldn't beat it. Pigsy couldn't. Even the Dragon Kings, the Tuxing, couldn't put it out. He says it, Cronon. It badly smoked him, nearly killed him.
So this isn't just any fire.
No, it's tied to spiritual cultivation. It's on another level.
Which leads Guanyin to ask that really pointed question, doesn't it?
Yes. She basically says, if it's Samadhi fire, a spiritual fire, why on earth did you go to the Dragon Kings? Their power is just, you know, water. Why didn't you come straight to me?
Ouch. Calling him out.
Totally. So Wukong has to explain himself. Says he wanted to come, but he was too messed up from the smoke, so he sent Pigsy.
Who then got tricked by the fake Guanyin.
Exactly. And that detail, the impersonation, seems to be what really gets Guanyin's attention. And her reaction.
What happens? The source says, det tar.
Yeah, her heart filled with great anger, not just annoyed like proper divine fury at someone daring to impersonate her.
Okay, so she's angry. What does she do?
Something dramatic. She takes her paws, her precious pure bottle, and just throws it into the sea.
Throws it. Her magic bottle. Wukong must have freaked out.
Oh, he did. The text says, yeah, his hair stood on end. But even then, his first thought is pure Wukong. What a waste of a good treasure. He's still thinking practically, even greedily.
Huh. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
But wait, doesn't something happen next? Something comes out of the sea.
Yes. This is where it gets really interesting. A creature emerges carrying the bottle.
What kind of creature?
The text describes it pretty vividly. It's this huge turtle or maybe tortoise. ancient looking. It mentions its origin name, Bami, says it moves super fast, like flying.
A flying turtle.
Well, moving quickly like flying. It has this amazing shell, colorful tortoise shell, and it's wearing this robe, a U, linked to cosmology, the nine palaces, 8 trigrams.
Wow. Okay, so like a cosmic turtle.
Seems like it. It crawls up, bows to Guan Yin 24 times. Very formal, very deep respect.
And Wukong's reaction to this ancient cosmic bowing turtle.
He completely dismisses it. Thinks to himself it's just a utsia, basically. A dumb servant who looks after the bottle. He totally misses the significance.
Typical Wukong. Focused on the wrong thing again. So the turtle brings the bottle back.
Right. And Guan Yin tells Wukong, okay, pick it up.
Uh-oh. I feel like this isn't going to be easy.
Not at all. Wukong tries, you know, uses all his massive strength, and the source is clear. No way he could move it. Not even a little bit.
Like the dragonfly trying to shake a stone pillar.
Exactly. He's baffled. Thinks maybe the smoke really weakened him that badly.
But that's not it, is it?
No. Guan Yin explains. The bottle isn't empty anymore. By throwing it in the sea, it magically collected all the water from everywhere. 3 rivers, 5 lakes, 8 seas, 4 major rivers, streams, springs, caves, all of it.
All the water?
Yeah.
In that one bottle.
Yep. It contains the weight of the world's waters now. She asks him, how could he possibly lift something that requires the strength to hold up the entire sea?
Whoa. Okay. That's immense power.
It's incredible. It shows her complete mastery over nature, over the elements. And then, just to drive the point home, she walks over and with one hand just casually, effortlessly lifts this impossibly heavy bottle.
Wow.
The turtle nods again, goes back into the sea. It's this quiet but absolutely overwhelming display of her power.
Okay, so she's shown who's boss, basically.
Yeah.
But then, doesn't she hesitate to actually help him?
Yeah, that's the next twist. After all that, she says she's reluctant to give him the bottle and send her helper, the dragon girl, along with him.
Why, after demonstrating all that power?
The source has her say it plainly. She thinks Wukong is not good-hearted.
Ouch. Still, yeah. After all this time on the journey.
Apparently. She's worried he might trick them. Maybe he's got eyes on the dragon girl, or he wants the powerful bottle for himself, his past, you know, the rebellious Monkey King thing. It's still hanging over him.
Wow. So his reputation is literally getting in the way of the mission.
Yeah.
That's quite a lesson.
It really is. She demands collateral. He has to leave something behind as a guarantee.
Collateral? What can he even offer?
Well, this leads to this amazing back and forth. He's desperate. He offers the robe she gave him.
She probably said no to that.
Yep. It's mine anyway. Then he offers his tiger skin skirt. He admits himself it's worthless.
Okay.
Then his iron staff. But he needs that to fight.
Right. Can't give that up.
Then, seriously, he offers the golden fillet, the band on his head.
The thing she put on him to control him.
Exactly. He's like, you put it on. I can't take it off. Do you want this back as collateral? It's almost funny.
So what does she want?
Something very specific and very personal to Wukong. She asks for one of his sea.
A life-saving hair. Those magical hairs she gave him.
The very ones. He does not want to give one up. The text even references that idiom about being stingy, not willing to pluck even a single hair.
So what breaks the deadlock?
He makes one final plea. He stops trying to bargain about himself and appeals to the bigger picture. He uses that phrase,
don't look at the monk's face, look at the Buddha's face.
Right, meaning if you won't do it for my sake, do it for the sake of the pilgrimage itself, for the Buddha's plan. Appeal to the higher purpose.
Yeah, does it work?
It does. That seems to be the key. The source says Guan Yin, now described as sort of leisurely and joyful.
Joyful, after all that.
Maybe relieved the negotiation is over or satisfied with his final appeal. Anyway, she agrees. She'll leave her lotus seat and go deal with Red Boy herself. At Guan Yin's home, the tidal sound cave on Mount Potalaka.
Yep.
Her very first instruction is just tells Wukong, cross the sea. He bows and says he wouldn't dare use his cloud somersault because it would expose his body.
Right, meaning his clothes are all patched up. He's got that tiger skin skirt.
Yeah, he's worried Guan Yin will think he's being disrespectful. So Guan Yin doesn't really make a big deal of it. She just tells her disciples, go get a lotus petal from the pool, puts it on the water, and tells Wukong basically, get on this.
And this is where Wukong's very practical mindset really bumps up against Guan Yin's kind of power.
Oh, so.
But he looks at this little pedal. The text says it's light and thin, and his first thought is purely logistical.
Okay.
He's worried, how can this tiny thing carry me? If it tips over and I fall in, and this is the best part, my tiger skin skirt will get wet.
Ah, priorities.
The brine will run off and I won't be able to wear it when it gets cold. He's genuinely concerned about ruining his skirt.
It's almost funny, isn't it? So focused on his gear when faced with, like, divine transport. But Guan Yin just says, you just get on and see.
Simple as that. He does, maybe a bit hesitantly.
And boom, this is the first really clear display of her unique power in this scene.
Yeah, what happens?
The petal, which was tiny moments before, instantly becomes more than 3/10 larger than a sea ship as soon as he steps on it. It just expands, easily big enough.
Wow, okay.
But he's still thinking practically. He's wondering how it's going to move. No sails, no oars.
Right.
Guan Yin just says, no need. And what's fascinating here is the contrast in power. Wukong's cloud somersault, that's immense speed, powered by his own energy and magic. It's direct force.
Uh-huh.
Guan Yin uses something totally different. The source says she just takes a puff of air to sort of steer the pedal and then another solid puff of air.
Hmm.
And poof, he's instantly across the entire vast South Ocean. Just like that.
Her power is, it's internal, isn't it? Effortless. It works through like subtle intention and just making things happen rather than brute force or visible effort.
Yeah.
It's a completely different level.
A different order of being, yeah.
Oh.
He lands, and his reaction is quite telling. He sort of laughs to himself, thinking, this bodhisattva is showing off her supernatural power, making old monkey appear and disappear without any effort.
Ah, so he sees the power, but he frames it as her just, you know, showing off.
Exactly. He kind of misses the fundamental difference in the type of power being used. So this small act, just crossing the sea, it's really the first hint that her solution to the demon problem isn't going to look like one of his usual head-on battles.
Yeah.
So Wukong's safely across, probably a little stunned by how easy that was. What's Guan Yin's next move then?
Okay. She immediately calls for her disciple, Hu Yan.
So she summons him, and he becomes pretty crucial for the next step, right? Gathering resources.
Precisely. Her request is very specific. Go to the Heavenly Palace, find your father, King Li Jing, and ask to borrow the Heavenly Stem's swords.
Not just some swords, though.
No, she emphasizes, I need the full set. All of them.
All 36.
Exactly. And Wien doesn't mess around. He flies straight to the Southern Heavenly Gate, finds his dad, explains Guan Yin's there with Wukong to deal with a demon, and she needs those swords.
And Li Jing's okay with it.
Immediately. He calls for Neza, Wien's famous brother.
Neza.
And they retrieve the swords. 36 of them.
Okay.
And there's a nice little character moment here, too. Wien tells Neza, basically, hey, brother, give mom my regards. This is urgent. I'll come back and pay respects properly when I return the swords.
Even in heaven, you got to remember to say hi to mom.
Right. So Wien gets the full set, brings them back to Guan Yin. She takes them, throws them up in the air, says a mantra.
And they transform.
Instantly into a 1,000-petaled lotus seat.
Wow. And Wukong, of course, he's watching all this. Does he get it?
Not quite. He has another one of his classic internal comments. The text says he secretly laughed, thinking basically, wow, this bodhisattva is being cheap.
Cheap? What?
He thinks she has her own fancy five-colored treasure lotus platform in her pool, but she won't use it. She makes someone else borrow swords instead.
Huh. So he sees it purely in terms of saving money or effort.
Yeah, he views it through his own very practical, maybe slightly cynical lens of resource management.
Yeah. Anyway, Guan Yin tells Wukong to basically stop his internal monologue and follow her. They head towards the mountain where the demon is. Okay, so they land on a mountain peak. Wukong figures they're about, what, 400 lyle from the demon's cave?
Yeah, about 125 miles or so. Quite a distance.
Guan Yin stops them right there, and she just chants one character.
Right, the foundational mantra.
Wow.
Divine energy, presence.
And immediately, the local mountain gods, the spirits of the place, they just appear.
Yep, they emerge, gather around her lotus seat, bow down.
And this is where she starts preparing the actual battlefield, a key step in her plan.
Absolutely crucial. She tells the gods, don't worry, she's here to capture the demon. But then she gives this very specific, very powerful command.
What is it?
Clean up this area for 300 lie around. That's huge. And do not allow a single living being to be on the ground.
300 light. That's like a 90-mile radius. Wow. And no living being. Super precise.
But then she adds this detail that's just remarkable. She says, take all the small beasts in their dens, the young bugs in their nests, and send them up to the peaks to live safely.
So the gods confirm the area is clear.
And then she just tips her pure vase.
And the description here in the text is just incredible. Water pours out, sounds like thunder.
Yeah, it instantly transforms the landscape. The source says the water covered mountaintops, rushed open rock walls. It describes the scene looking like the South Sea itself.
Covered mountaintops like the power of the sea, rushed open rock walls like a vast ocean. It paints this picture. Black fog, dark waves, gold lotuses popping up everywhere.
It lists specific plants and birds, too. Things you'd find in her sacred realm. Tender lotus sprouts, shell leaves, purple bamboo, green pines, parrots, partridges.
And it mentions she's using her great dharma and focusing her internal meditation.
The scene becomes explicitly like the realm of Mount Luosia, which is her home in the South Sea. She's not just flooding the place, she's basically recreating her own sacred environment right there on that mountain.
Which raises a big question. How does changing the whole environment like that affect the fight to come?
That's the key, isn't it? By creating this watery, lotus-filled space, she's setting up conditions that are perfect for her kind of power water purity.
Right. And maybe not so good for the demon, who's known for fire, presumably.
Exactly. It could weaken or neutralize his abilities. She's controlling the whole arena, setting the stage before the fight even begins.
It's a kind of power. Wukong doesn't really use much shaping reality itself to make things favorable instead of just meeting the enemy wherever they are.
Mm-hmm. And Wukong sees all this. The text says he secretly praises her. He thinks, wow, this really is a great compassionate bodhisattva.
And he compares her approach to his own.
Yeah, he contrasts her effortless power and her care for all the little creatures with how he'd use the bottle. He thinks, if old monkey had this, I'd just tip it over the mountain. Who cares about birds or bugs?
So he recognizes the power and the compassion and sees how different it is from his own more direct, maybe destructive style.
He sees the wisdom in it, even if it's totally alien to how he operates. It's a real moment of growth for him, seeing this different, maybe higher form of power and, well, morality in action.
Okay, so the battlefield is completely transformed. It's this sacred, watery space. Now, Guanyin turns to Wukong for his specific part in the plan, which is maybe the most surprising bit.
Yeah, this is where the strategy takes that really counterintuitive turn.
Yeah.
Especially for someone like Wukong. She tells him, hold out your hand.
Okay.
She takes a willow branch from her vase, dips it in dew, and writes a single character on his palm.
Mei.
Mei.
Mm-hmm. Meaning confusion, bewilderment.
Exactly. Then she gives him the instructions that must have sounded completely backwards to the great sage equal to heaven.
What were they?
She tells him, clench your fist. Quickly go challenge that demon for battle. You must lose. You are not allowed to win.
Whoa, hang on. Tell the ultimate fighter his job is to lose.
Right. And as he's losing, he has to retreat towards me here, back into this watery environment she just created.
Okay. So Wukong, he's got the meal character on his palm. He flies back to the demon's cave.
And immediately starts yelling, monster, open up.
Standard opening.
The little demons inside tell their king, who just says, you know, ignore him, keep the door shut.
Wukong's not known for patience, though.
Nope. He ramps it up with his usual insults. Good son, you kicked your father out, still not opening the door.
Charming. Does it work?
The demon king still refuses. Wukong yells a couple more times, gets fed up, and just smashes a hole in the door with his staff.
Problem solved, Wukong style.
That gets the demon king's attention. He leaps out, furious, grabs his spear, yelling about Wukong daring to break his door after getting away before.
And Wukong fires back.
Oh, yeah. My son, you drove your father out. What crime is that? Just poking the bear.
Enrages the demon naturally. They start fighting.
Yep. The account says they go at it for 4 or 5 rounds.
Yeah.
And then right on cue, Wukong does exactly what Guanyin told him.
He initiates the retreat.
The source says Wukong clenched his fist, dragged his staff, and retreated in defeat, performing the action perfectly.
And the demon falls for it.
Seems to. He sees Wukong apparently struggling and immediately boasts, right, I'm going to go wash Tang Monk. Still focused on the main prize.
But Wukong keeps the act up.
Yeah, he keeps goading him. Good son, heaven's watching you, come on.
Trying to draw him further out.
Exactly. The demon gets even angrier, chases him. They fight a few more rounds, and Wukong retreats again.
Okay, now the demon must be getting suspicious.
He is. He's genuinely confused. He challenges Wukong, says something like, "Hey, monkey, you were good for 20 or 30 rounds before. Why are you running away mid-fight now? What's wrong?" He can tell something's off.
So Wukong needs an excuse.
And he comes up with a brilliant bit of misdirection, playing right into the plan. He laughs and says, "Worthy lad, your father is afraid you'll start breathing fire."
Oh, playing on the demon's known power. That's clever.
It's perfect. The demon, totally convinced by this seemingly logical reason for Wukong running away, falls for it completely. He says, "Okay, I won't use fire. Come on up."
And Wukong pushes it a little more?
Just a bit. "If you won't use fire, let's move away from your front door. A good hero doesn't fight right on the doorstep."
And the demon actually agrees, moves away from the cave.
Yep, totally duped. He moves away from the entrance to fight further out. The text confirms he truly raised his spear and chased.
Okay, the trap is set.
And this is when Wukong makes the final move for this phase. Wukong dragged his staff and released his clenched fist.
Opens his hand, activating the full confusion spell.
Instantly. The moment he unclenches, with the demon now close and in the right spot, the character hits him. The source is the Demon King was affected by the confusion and bewilderment and simply kept chasing. He's lost it.
Wukong has successfully led Red Boy to Guanyin's doorstep, so to speak.
Right, he's pretending to be scared, saying, "Oh no, we're near the Bodhisattva."
Yeah.
Trying to get Red Boy to back off.
But Red Boy's having none of it. He's described as just furious, totally locked onto Wukong, chasing him down. The fake fear, it doesn't work at all.
He just keeps coming.
He just keeps coming. And Wukong, seeing they're where they need to be, does his classic shake transform thing.
Oh, yes.
And ducks into the divine light surrounding Guanyin. Smart move, gets him out of the way, and puts Red Boy face to face with her.
Which leads right to Red Boy marching up and being incredibly disrespectful, really.
Absolutely. He sees Wukong vanish into the light, strides forward, and just demands, "Are you the rescuer Sun Wukong invited?" Like, multiple times.
He's really challenging her.
Yeah, pushing her. And Guanyin, her first move.
Silence. Just nothing. Doesn't answer him at all.
Which, of course, just makes Red Boy even angrier. He shouts the question again, grips his spear. Still nothing from Guanyin.
So he attacks.
He does. He thrusts the spear right at her chest. You'd expect, you know, a divine counter move, some kind of force field.
Yeah, something defensive or offensive.
But no. This is where the strategy really kicks in. Guanyin just transforms, becomes a beam of golden light, and shoots up into the sky.
Okay, but she leaves something behind.
Crucially, yes, her lotus platform just sitting there.
And Wukong sees this and completely freaks out. Right.
Totally misreads it. He flies up after her, complaining like, "Why'd you pretend to be deaf? You got chased off by a spear and you left your platform." He genuinely thinks she's been beaten and lost her treasure.
Bless his heart. Still thinking like a brawler.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Guanyin just tells him, basically, shut up and watch. She knows what's happening. Wukong and her disciple Muza are watching from above.
Meanwhile, Red Boy's down below thinking he's won.
Oh, yeah. He's gloating. Calls Wukong a mischievous monkey. Guanyin a useless bodhisattva. He thinks he actually stabbed her and she vanished in fear, leaving her seat behind.
Incredible arrogance. And then he sits on it.
He does. Climbs right onto the sacred lotus platform, mocking them both.
Wukong's still fixated on the platform itself, isn't he?
Yeah.
Saying, "Oh, great, it's gone, given away."
Yep, he points down, "Look, the demon's sitting on it. You can't possibly want it back now."
But Guanyin's like,
"Precisely, I want him to sit on it." It was a trap, using his own pride against him.
Wukong even says something about how Red Boy's smaller body fits it better.
He does. Guanyin has to tell him again, "Be quiet and watch my power." She's about to spring the trap.
Okay, so this is the first transformation. What happens?
Guanyin, still up in the air, points her willow branch down and just says one word, retreat.
And the platform
instantly changes. All the color, the light, it vanishes. And what's revealed underneath is, well, soft petals. It's made of hundreds of incredibly sharp knife points. Heavenly stellar blades, the text calls them.
Oof. So Red Boy is now sitting directly on knives.
Directly on them.
Oh, yeah.
And Guanyin's not done. She tells Muza to take his staff.
The monster subduing one.
That's the one. And strike the handles of the knives, like building a wall, she says. Basically drive them in deeper.
Oh, wow.
So Muza flies down and just starts hammering away at those knife handles. Hundreds, maybe 1,000 times.
That sounds agonizing.
It is. The description is graphic blades piercing his legs, blood flowing, flesh tearing. He's an absolute agony.
So he must give up then.
He throws his spear away, yeah. And he's desperately trying to pull these knives out with his bare hands. But here's the thing. Wukong, watching this, is actually kind of impressed by his toughness. He points out to Guanyin, look, the monster's not scared. He's still trying to pull them out.
He's incredibly resilient, even for a demon.
Amazingly so. And Guanyin sees this too. She calls Muzo back up. It's clear she doesn't want to just torture or kill him this way. The goal is subjugation, compliance, and the knives alone aren't quite getting her there.
So plan B, or transformation 2, I guess?
Exactly. She lowers the willow branch again, and this time recites a mantra just, ugh.
And the knife.
They change again. This time, they become barbed hooks, like wolf's teeth, the text says.
Barbed? Oh, that's nasty.
Crucial detail. Barbed means you can't just pull them out. Any attempt would just tear the flesh more. He's well and truly stuck now.
Okay, now he must break.
Now he breaks. Completely defeated, panicked, and unbearable pain, he starts crying out, begging Guanyin for mercy.
What does he say? Does he sound genuine?
He admits his arrogance, eyes without pupils, didn't recognize her power, pleads for his life, and he makes the offer. I'll stop being evil, basically, and I'll join your path, follow your rules.
Sounds like a conversion, but under extreme duress.
Extremely. He's literally impaled and helpless. So Guanyin, Wukong, and the white parrot come down. Guanyin asks him, are you really willing to accept the precepts?
And he agrees.
Tearfully, yes. All he cares about right now is getting out of this situation.
So what does Guanyin do? Just release him.
Not quite yet. First, there's a ritual. She takes out a golden razor.
A razor.
Yep. And shaves parts of his head, leaving these three tufts twisted up into little horn-like knots. It's a specific style called Mount Tai pressing down. It looks, well, unusual.
Like a symbolic humbling.
Seems like it. Wukong even remarks on it, finds it funny how strange and kind of ambiguous he looks now.
And she gives him a new name too, right?
She does. Shankai Tongzi, child of wealth or good fortune. Again, Red Boy accepts anything to make the pain stop.
Okay, so pain, surrender, ritual shaving, new name. Surely now he's subdued.
You'd think so. Guanyin seems to think so. She points her hand, says retreat again.
And the hooks come out.
Instantly. And the text makes a point of saying without injury, like the holes just vanish. Pure magic. She sends Muzo off with the knives, tells him to wait for her.
Okay. I sense a but coming.
Oh, a big but. The source is very clear. His wild nature was not subdued. The moment he feels his legs are healed, feels that weird new hairstyle, he's not grateful.
He grabs his spear again.
Yeah,
seriously.
He grabs his spear and goes right back after Guanyin. Shouting that the whole thing, the knives, the shaving, the nails, it was all just a trick, some kind of masting technique. And he declares he absolutely will not accept any precepts.
Unbelievable. Wukong must be livid.
Furious, ready to jump in with his staff. But Guanyin stops him again.
She still has another plan.
She says, I have my own method. And this is where it gets really interesting. She pulls out a gold ring, a Jingoer.
Not the ring, Wukong's ring.
No, but related. She explains it. The Buddha gave her three rings for this journey. Wukong got the tight fillet ring, the Jingoer, controlled by Tripitaka's mantra. Another one, the forbidden fillet ring, Jingoer, went to some mountain god. This third one, the golden filing ring, Jingoer, she kept for herself. So it's part of a set designed for control.
Okay, a different ring, different purpose. What does she do with it?
She shakes it, says change, and it multiplies into five rings.
Five.
Five. And she throws them. One lands on his head, two on his hands, two on his feet. Pinning him down magically.
Wow. And then the mantra.
Then she prepares to chant the mantra specifically for this ring, golden filing ring mantra.
And Wukong hears mantra and panics.
Completely. Thinks she's about to accidentally zap him with his own headache mantra. You can almost feel his PTSD.
Huh. Poor guy.
Guanyin has to quickly reassure him. No, this one's for the child, not you. Wukong breathes a sigh of relief and watches very closely.
So what does this mantra do? Is it like the knife?
No, totally different effect. Not direct physical injury like the blades. As she chants, Red Boy just loses control. He's scratching his ears, rubbing his face, writhing, rolling on the ground uncontrollably.
Like an overwhelming sensory or mental assault?
Exactly. It's described as this immense, limitless power. It's not about piercing skin. It's about an irresistible magical force linked to those rings that completely overwhelms his will and his senses. This is what finally stops him cold.